Tina Brown, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Beast, has sent us another selection of writings that have grabbed her attention, things she likes to talk about that you may then talk about. We call the series Word of Mouth. The first article on your list here of books and articles for us to check out is called America the Miserable.
Yes, it's from the Spectator magazine in the UK, and it's written by a professor of history at Amory, a Brit. And he's commenting about how he finds that compared to the time that he came to America in 1977, when everyone, he said, was cheerful and peppy and purposeful, he now feels that everybody here has really kind of become deflated. The sense of kind of can-do spirit in America has gone, and how very pessimistic about their country they are. And he even cites the success of Avatar, which he says, in its lumbering allegorical style, it depicts an American way of life that consists in equal parts of cynicism, destruction, and a brutal galaxy-encompassing greed. You might think citizens would object to such demonization, but they don't, etc., etc.
I want to challenge a couple of parts of his argument, though. You talk about Avatar making America look bad, but Americans have always argued and debated and criticized their own actions. And he says that part of America's bad attitude is that Americans are cranky about immigrants right now. But Americans have always been arguing over immigrants, and there have always been anti-immigrant groups. It's hard for me to see what's really different in America than 20 or 30 years ago, as he says.
Well, I think one thing that's different is a genuine real malaise, of course, with unemployment, where people have a lot to be depressed about. It is, in a way, a fashionable thing right now for the sort of thinking classes to write long screeds about how America's power has ended in the world and how America is never going to regain its position against China, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, that's one thing that is different, is the wide public perception of China as the rising power in the world.
Yeah, that is definitely a factor, I think. Of course, you know, being an immigrant myself, I only see how wonderful America is compared to the UK. I mean, in the UK, for instance, I tend to think when I call up, I always hear the rain in their voices. Hello, they say. And I think to myself, I'm so happy that I left. I don't have to hear hello.
Well, let's go from this article, America the Miserable, to a recollection of a miserable moment in the American economy. Henry Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, is out with a memoir that you've been reading.
Yes, I have. Well, I read the extract in the Wall Street Journal on Saturday, which was the section about Mr. McCain comes to Washington. And it really was, I thought, a riveting account. But
let's remember, this seems like 100 years ago. John McCain, in the middle of the presidential campaign and the middle of the financial crisis, said, hold everything, stop the campaign. I want everybody to come to Washington, and we're going to solve this economic crisis right here.
Right. It does seem like a million years ago, doesn't it? There is a great scene in here where McCain finally gets this meeting that he's summoned. And then what Paulson gives is an account how in the meeting with the president and all the players assembled, including Obama, McCain had absolutely nothing to say. It was like, I'm here to stop the fire. Well, maybe I'll just stand here and wait for a pail. And finally, Obama says loudly after McCain has said, oh, no, I'll wait my turn, etc., I'd like to hear what Senator McCain has to say since we haven't heard from him yet. And Paulson has a comment. He says, as he spoke, I could see Obama chuckling. McCain's comments were anticlimactic, to say the least. His return to Washington was impulsive and risky, and I don't think he had a plan in mind. If anything, his gambit only came back to hurt him, as he was polarized in the press afterwards, and in the end, I don't believe his maneuver significantly influenced the TARP legislative process. Amazing moment in politics, completely subsuming any real care for this crisis that the country was in at the time.
And a revealing moment in this partisan political time where so many people see everything through a partisan lens, that you have a Republican president's Treasury Secretary basically saying John McCain, his fellow Republican, wasn't very bright here, and Barack Obama, although he was being a crafty politician, looked pretty smart.
Exactly right. I think that's what to me is what's authentic about it. It did feel like a real piece of reporting, which I kind of didn't expect from the dome-headed Mr. Paulson.
Well, let's move on to another political memoir of a sort here. Jenny Sanford's book, Staying True. We heard her on the air on Morning Edition earlier this week. You've also been reading her memoir here.
Well, I have, and I have to say that I'm getting increasingly impatient with the Wronged Wives Club. The men they're married to are utter snakes and worms, but these women, they do buy into this stuff, and then they are so humorless about it at the end. I mean, Jenny Sanford's book is such a pious document. At some point, I really wish one of these women would begin their book and say, I'm writing this book out of sweet revenge. My husband was a total worm, and this is payback time.
My husband,
it will be a little more honest. Instead of it's, you know, I'm doing this for the children, I'm doing this because my dignity this, I'm doing this for the political process, or whatever. It is all nonsense. It is about one of two things, money or revenge, very often both.
We're getting word of mouth from Tina Brown, books and articles that have crossed her desk, and they include an article about journalism, which is interesting, Tina, because you've sent us articles that emphasize emphasize narrative journalism, long stories in the past, and now you've sent us an article by Michael Kinsley, and the headline is, Cut This Story.
God, I love this piece. This is in The Atlantic, and he writes a piece about how everything is too long and how he says that the demise of newspapers is not fully because of reasons of the economy, etc., but really because newspaper articles are too long.
They're boring.
On the internet, news articles get to the point, he says. Newspaper writing, by contrast, is encrusted with conventions that don't add to your understanding of the news. And then he goes on to parse out a paragraph from any kind of New York Times story, which is headed, Sweeping Healthcare Plan Passes House. And the sentence is, handing Obama a hard-fought victory, the House narrowly approved a sweeping overhaul of the nation's healthcare system Saturday night, advancing legislation that Democrats said could stand as their defining social policy achievement.
I'm already asleep.
Exactly right. We keep hearing about bad writing on the internet, but I have to say, writing online is a kind of a truth serum because you really find yourself as an editor saying, forget the throat clearing, get to the point. And actually, it's a very good discipline for writers to remind themselves they're actually talking to readers, and we haven't got the time to sit there for the sort of situational atmospherics.
Although, how do you match that with what you've previously said when you have argued and defended longer journalism with lots of context and novelistic detail and really giving people a picture of things and a sense of the story?
Well, I think narrative should be tight as well. I know when I was writing my book on the Diana Chronicles, I actually knew I had to, from the very beginning, get us into the room with Princess Diana, and then I could, if necessary, backtrack or whatever. But you need to make readers feel that something's about to happen and do it fast.
I'm compelled to mention one other thing, though. Michael Kinsley here critiques a newspaper article that runs to about 1,400 and some words. His own article is 1,809 words by our official count.
It is a long piece, but I've got to tell you that it goes like the wind. And actually, one thing I will say in defense of journalists is nothing is as bad as the kind of prolixus dinosaurus that attacks congressional bills. You know, if all these editors are getting laid off now, let's send them to Washington to edit the healthcare bill. Maybe somebody can actually read it. You know?
Cut those 2,000 pages down to 20.
Absolutely.
Word of mouth from Tina Brown. Tina, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
She's editor-in-chief of The Daily Beast, and we have links to the writing she mentioned at npr.org.